Transition Condition.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. As part of the fallout from the financial crisis, we're expected to hear today from the incoming and the outgoing. President-elect Barack Obama is set to speak again today about his economic plans. But before that, this morning, the Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson outlines his idea to help clear the consumer credit logjam. To talk about Paulson's latest economic adventure, we're joined by Marketplace's Steve Henn in Washington. Steve, what do we make of this?
Well, we expect that Paulson's going to announce a new program that is designed to pump billions of dollars into the market for consumer credit card debt, student loans, and car loans. You know, earlier this year, the private market for consumer debt was pretty much frozen. It used to be that banks and investors would buy up bundles of credit card debt or car loans, and that pumped money into credit card companies and auto finance companies and ultimately brought interest rates down and made it easier for all of us to borrow money. When investors got spooked, that whole system began to break down, interest rates started going up, and that's made a rough economy even worse.
So this is all about credit, right? How's this going to work?
Well, the idea is that the Treasury Department's going to kick in about $10 or $20 billion. And this is, at this point, just speculation. But chances are good that the Federal Reserve will have a much bigger stake in the program, maybe $100 billion or even $200 billion. One of the interesting things that's going on in Washington right now is that folks at the Treasury Department have realized that $700 billion bailout package, which is now almost half gone, really isn't big enough to solve the nation's economic problems. So increasingly, when they're doing things like bailing out Citibank a second time or trying to get this program started, they're relying more on the Federal Reserve to come up with most of the cash.
Marketplace's Steve Henn reporting from Washington. Steve, thanks.
Sure.
The world's biggest mining company, BHP Billiton, says it's nixing its multi-billion-dollar hostile bid for rival Rio Tinto. They're blaming it on the global financial crisis and regulatory worries. Here's Kyle James with a story.
If the takeover had gone through, it would have been one of the biggest ever. But the global slowdown and tumbling commodity prices made the deal look much less sweet to BHP. Julian Emery is a mining analyst at Ambrian Capital.
I think they needed to reassess the situation. It's nearly a year now since the bid was first made, and conditions have altered so dramatically since then. Metal prices have dropped so enormously.
BHP also had regulatory worries. The EU wanted it to sell off some of its business before it gave the go-ahead. In the end, the increased debt exposure was a risk BHP didn't want to take. Steelmakers are breathing easier, though. They'd oppose the deal, fearing the new company's control of one-third of the world's iron ore exports would have given it too much pricing power. In Berlin, I'm Kyle James for Marketplace.
European markets are mixed at this hour. Maybe they don't know how to make or what to make of the BHP pullback. Not much movement in either direction this morning. London and Paris are up by less than 1%. The German market's pretty much flat, too. In Asia, the Nikkei and Hang Seng are up 3-5% so far, and the Chinese market is lower. Here's how you know this global financial crisis is big. Russians aren't drinking the vodka like they used to. Many can't afford it. Some stores have big stockpiles. An industry group says those numbers are way up over last year. Also up, alcohol poisonings, according to the National Alcohol Association. Apparently some Russians are trying to get a cheaper fix with dangerous vodka substitutes.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world. Online at shrm.org. By CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight 423 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce emissions. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And by Gather.com, if it's happening in the world, it's being discussed on Gather. You can join the conversation at Gather.com.
There are a myriad of economic stimulus packages floating around Washington, and you'll likely hear about one issue in the debate, wage growth. But like everything else in D.C., there are two sides to the debate. The Democratic side, wages are down for the poor and middle class, and the Republican side, wages are up for the middle class. Who's right? Economist and commentator Justin Wolfer says it's all about the data.
The Republicans are describing the income of the average person, and that average income has risen by 10% since the year 2000, which is an okay, if not stellar, rate of progress. The Democrats focus instead on the typical household. Think about lining up all the households, from poorest to richest, and choose the income of the household in the middle. Economists call this median household income. You might call it middle-class income. Unfortunately, the income of this middle household has fallen since 2000, and it is now about $50,000. It's pretty unusual for the living standards of the middle class to decline like this. Now, you might have a different definition of the middle class, but I have sliced and diced the data, and unless you want to start counting millionaires, you can't escape the conclusion that middle-class incomes have declined. How can the typical household be suffering economic decline when average incomes rose? It's simple arithmetic. If someone earns 20 times as much as you, the average income statistics give them 20 times greater weight than you. Since 2000, the average income of the bottom 99% of all taxpayers fell, while the incomes of the richest 1% grew. But the richest 1% are 20 times richer. So their rising incomes largely offset the falling incomes elsewhere. So it turns out that Republicans and Democrats are each telling the truth, just different truths. Which truth you care about may depend on just where you stand in the pecking order.
Justin Wolfers teaches at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business. Finally, the Beatles say money can't buy you love, and you can't seem to buy the Beatles songs at Apple's iTunes store. Doesn't look like that's going to change anytime soon. The people behind Rock Band will be putting out a Beatles music video game next year that had revived some hopes that the band might go digital in other ways. But Paul McCartney says a dispute involving his former label EMI is keeping his former band's music out of iTunes. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chitakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.